Hello, Kate Lamb here, and you're listening to Asia Calling. This week, we're putting arts in the limelight.
Art is a soft power and a tool to use for peace in the country.
Rising from the ashes and painting war-torn walls in Kabul, reviving the ancient art of qawwali, or devotional Islamic music, in India, and shaking off the dust of the art collection of Indonesia's first president, Sukarno. Welcome to Asia Calling, and thanks for tuning into the show. The Art Lords group aims to change the face of Afghanistan through its graffiti. They paint war-torn walls to highlight social problems in the country after almost four decades of conflict. Mudassir Shah has this story from Kabul.
Eyes are always described as a symbol of beauty in art, in Eastern literature. But the two eyes painted on a wall in front of me in Shahr-e-Nau area in Kabul have literally beautified an ugly security wall.
These we are watching eyes were produced by Art Lords, a group of young people who paint war-torn walls across the city of Kabul. Kabir Mukammil is the leader.
We have been facing cultural and social problems in Afghanistan, and art has never been used to solve disputes, but always force is used to solve the disputes and issues in this country. Art is a soft power and a tool to use for peace in the country.
Kabir graduated from fine arts in Australia. He returned to Afghanistan 4 years ago and realized the city had lost its beauty. He gathered some friends and together they have painting walls since June. Kabir says their message is clear: peace and clean government.
We want to show that violence is not a solution. Bloodshed should be quelled on earth, and corruption should be stopped too in our country, since it breeds other evils.
The latest report by Transparency International puts Afghanistan in the top three most corrupt countries in the world. Omar Sharifi from Art Lords believes that art speaks a thousand words.
I prefer to use art, music and dance since this attract young people. We use what they are most interested in to convey our message. And a lot of young people want to join us now.
High school student Nasser Kakard passes the wall every day.
The Art Lords group has taken away the ugliness of the walls with a stroke of their brushes. I saved some money from my pocket money and put cold drink for them for their effort. It's my way to show my respect to them.
A self-funded group, Art Lords, hopes to highlight social issues with their graffiti. Their latest project is called The Heroes of My City, The Street Sweepers.
Heroes in Afghanistan are always considered those who have weapons and arms. We want to change the concept of a hero in our country, and we want to portray sweepers as heroes who clean the city daily.
Kabir also wants to invite fellow Pakistani artists to paint the walls here. Due to a recent bombing in Kabul, where Pakistanis were accused of being behind the incident, tension has been rising between the two countries. Kabir believes his project could be the perfect bridge.
We want to bridge the Afghan and Pakistani communities and bring them close to each other. Art does not have boundaries, while politics divides us. People should exchange ideas, and art has the power to do it.
Farisha Calling, Mudassar Shah reports from Kabul, Afghanistan.
Indonesia's first president was a famous art lover. Over his lifetime, Sukarno collected more than 2,000 works of art by both Indonesian and international artists. But he wasn't just a collector, he was also a painter himself. After decades of being locked inside the presidential palace, Sukarno's collection was displayed in Jakarta last year. Ria Apriani met the exhibition curator Miki Susanto to find out more.
Dressed in a green kebaya, a traditional Javanese blouse, brown batik and a flower in her left ear, a beautiful and mysterious portrait is now on display at the National Gallery in Jakarta. Rini was captured in a painting by Sukarno in 1958. Exhibition curator Miki Susanto says no one knows for sure who she is.
Siapa sesungguhnya Rini? Pak Agus Darmawan.
Who is the real Rini? It is said that it was his nanny called Serena. For Sukarno, Serena was representative of women from that era.
Serena played an important role in Sukarno's life, even warranting a mention in his book. But the painting of Rini has made people curious about the symbol, the woman behind the painting, says Mike.
Symbols can be interpreted in many ways. Sukarno had the ability to give particular meaning when he did something.
So far, Mike has discovered 15 works by Sukarno. The paintings, along with Sukarno's art collections, were kept safe at the palace, while other works were stored by his friends or went with him in exile. But Rini has been displayed at the presidential palace for decades. Much of Sukarno's art collection has been held under lock and key at the palace for years. But this August, the collection made its debut at the National Gallery in the capital. Of the thousands of pieces in the collection, 28 were chosen by the curator to illustrate Indonesia's fight for independence. The exhibition includes works from 22 artists and, of course, Sukarno. Sukarno believed the walls of the presidential palace should be filled with art. But while he happily solicited works, he wasn't always willing to pay for them, as well-known Indonesian expressionist painter Afandi once discovered. Here's Mike again.
Pernah suatu kali Afandi itu ke Gedung Agung. Afandi ke Gedung Agung minta duit.
There was one time when Afandi came to the presidential palace and asked that his debt be settled. Sukarno was confused because he didn't have any money, and he offered Afandi a presidential pen with President Sukarno's name carved on it. But Afandi refused. Then Sukarno gave Afandi him and his wife's used clothing, a sack of rice, and a presidential physician. At the time, Afandi had asked for money so that he could seek medical help for his sick wife.
Besides buying art from known painters, Sukarno also hunted down art during his travels abroad. One of the prize pieces in his collection is a painting entitled Malay Girl with Flower by famous Mexican artist Diego Rivera.
Lukisan itu didapat oleh Presiden Sukarno ketika berkunjung ke Mexico dan modelnya.
The painting was obtained during a presidential visit to Mexico. The model was a diplomat's wife, Ancha Effendi. She was prompted by her husband, Bose Effendi, to be painted by Diego Rivera. At the time, she was expecting her second child.
While many works have survived over time, curator Mike Susanto says that thousands have been damaged by natural conditions, like the tropical climate. The Indonesian government has struggled to find funds to maintain the paintings, which is why Mike advised that other parties be engaged to help.
Terus. Memang karena
Those artworks that were neglected, it was due to the limited budget and staff. I mean, the ministry has to be a partner. The restoration can't only be left to the civil servants.
Even though it was left for years, the collection remains a priceless part of Indonesian history. For Asia Calling, this report was produced by Ria Apriani in Jakarta.
You're listening to Asia Calling on KBR. Qawwali is Sufi devotional and mystic poetry that promotes a tolerant form of Islam. Yet as rock and Bollywood music have taken hold, many have forgotten about this ancient tradition. From Old Delhi, the birthplace of this unique poetry, Asia Calling correspondent Naeem Sohutra has the story of one group that is working to preserve the classical form.
It's a humid, thirsty evening in historic Old Delhi. Dozens of devotees are here at the shrine of the 12th century Muslim saint Hazrat Nizamuddin Awliya. The narrow streets are buzzing with vendors selling fresh rose petals and incense. It's here at the shrine that a group of traditional mystic singers are preparing for tonight's performance. They start with the Persian Islamic poem Kun Faya Kun, written by a subcontinent's famous poet Amir Khusro. Qawwali is a Sufi form of devotional music that depicts a mystical and tolerant form of the Islam. The Sufis preached about humanity, and their emphasis on treating everyone equally is the reason why Muslims and non-Muslims visit their shrines. And their poetry is something like meditation, explains the lead singer Tahir Ali.
Qawwali has a connection with the soul. It touches the heart of the listeners. Once it touches their hearts, the whole body feels it too. That's why many people ask us to sing Qawwali in Persian language. While many people don't understand Persian, they still enjoy the music.
Followers of different religions flock to this place every week, seeking fulfillment of their wishes, some from as far as Europe and America. For Qawwali singers, performing at this shrine is like a dream come true. Sayyid Tahir Ali and his two brothers are visiting from Pakistan.
Although Qawwali had long been sung even from the times of the Prophet Muhammad, at that time, the style was different. It was sung with duf, a Persian frame drum, only. After that, Saint Nizamuddin Awliya and his disciple Amir Khusro took Qawwali to its peak. So this place is the birthplace of Qawwali.
Khusro is known as the parrot of the subcontinent because of his great and melodious poetry. And his addition of music to the mystic poetry has immortalized the form, says the shrine's caretaker Sayyid Nizam Ali Nizami.
Hazrat Amir Khusro invented different musical instruments like the sitar and tabla drum. His master Nizamuddin Awliya once asked him to develop a common language that people from different religions could speak and understand. So he invented the Urdu language by including the words of various languages, including Arabic and Persian. Today, the language is largely spoken.
Over the centuries, the mystic music has also made its way into the film industry of India, Pakistan, and other regional countries. But shrine caretaker Nizam Ali Nizami, who is a descendant of the saint, says the classical Qawwali is not often heard today.
To be fair, whatever you are listening to these days is not original Qawwali. Before, the singers used to sing the poetry of mystic poets. Today, some of it could turn listeners into infidels.
As modern generations lose touch with origins of the form, and rock, pop, and Bollywood music take over, one group in India is pushing to revive classical Qawwali.
It was getting diminished. It didn't vanish altogether, because otherwise wouldn't have been able to retrieve. So it was basically getting diminished, and what we tried to do is like to promote them.
That's Diti Ray, the program officer for the Aga Khan Trust for Culture, or the AKTC. As part of a Qawwali revival project, Diti and her team have been documenting different forms of Qawwali.
So there are quite a few groups, and there are only two groups who are still staying in the Hazrat Nizamuddin Basti, and the rest of, I think, around 3-4 groups have shifted to Old Delhi area. So they are still considered as to be the traditional custodians of the music tradition of the Dargah, and they sing a lot of Hazrat Amir Khusro.
And the team is also exploring outside Delhi.
So we have documented in 3 different genres of music, like Qawwali, classical and folk. In all these 3 genres, whosoever was singing whatever style of Hazrat Amir Khusro's repertoire, we tried to document them from far off places like Jaipur, Agra, Punjab, Kashmir. And we did a lot of shows with international performers also, especially from Pakistan, like Farid Ayaz.
Tori surat ke bal hari nijam tori.
As part of the initiative, a dedicated website has also been launched, where the entire works of the poet Amir Khusro are available in the voice of famous singers. Leading Bollywood star singer Chand Nizami is doing his part too, by helping to train young singers in classical Qawwali.
क्योंकि ये कव्वाली अगर पूरी दुनिया में खत्म भी हो जाएगी ना तो कोई फर्क नहीं पड़ता क्योंकि खानकाहों में ही कव्वाली रहेगी.
From a small family house adjacent to the shrine, his Sikandaria family, he says, has been performing for the last 700 years. From the birthplace of कव्वाली, Chand now has the opportunity to share his knowledge with young people who want to continue the tradition. For Asia Calling, this is Naeem Sohotra in Old Delhi, India.
Finally on Asia Calling, most people don't look forward to clocking in at the office, and that's certainly the case in South Korea, which tops global rankings for the longest daily work hours. But artist Young Kyung-soo is giving workers something to laugh about. He pokes fun at the country's office culture with his satirical cartoon series that's taken off on social media. Jason Strother in Seoul has his story.
For millions of South Koreans, the morning subway ride to the office begins a very long day at work. Most will be expected to stay at their jobs till late at night, or whenever their bosses say it's time to go home. Artist Yang Kyung-soo says that's not all workers here are expected to do.
You also have to follow your boss orders without exception. I don't think office workers have any freedom to express their own opinions at their jobs.
The 32-year-old says Korean office culture is a mix of top-down Confucianism as well as military hierarchy, the result of mandatory conscription for all South Korean men. It's this workplace dynamic that's the subject of his popular single-frame illustration series called Yakchiki, which roughly means pesticide. An authoritarian, passive-aggressive, or even creepy boss is a figure many office workers here have to deal with, the artist says, or at least that's what he's heard.
I've never worked in an office myself, but I have a lot of friends who do. The only time they can open up about how they feel is after work, when they're drinking. I ask them why can't They tell their opinions to their bosses, but they tell me it's impossible.
In Yakjigi, Yang gives his characters the power to say things that their real-life counterparts could never get away with. Here's an example. In one illustration, a boss approaches his employee holding a big bag with the words "feeling rewarded" written on it. It's in lieu of payment for working long hours. The employee says,
"You've got to be kidding me."
And thinks,
"I don't care about feeling rewarded. Just pay me overtime."
In another cartoon, a boss leans over a desk and touches the arm of a young female employee. Captions above their heads read,
"You remind me of my daughter."
"But you only have two sons."
Thanks in part to its humor, Yang's Yakjigi cartoon has gained hundreds of thousands of followers on social media, many of whom work in offices. I wanted to find out what some of those fans think about the series. I met up with three office workers during their coffee break. They didn't want me to use their names, but they are all big fans of Yakjigi.
The author shouts out to this lady what I couldn't have said to my boss. So yes, he sympathizes with all the workers in the office. It also kind of reminds me that I'm not the only one who's suffering these. I don't know, that's really what's good about his cartoon.
The group's manager says Yakjigi reminds her of what not to be like.
I don't want to make my junior staff feel that kind of feelings, you know.
She turns to her co-workers.
But I don't know, am I doing okay?
Is she a good son?
I ask if they think she's a good boss.
Yeah, sure, Vita, she's
probably
good.
Probably you can't say no here. That's the culture we have. Yeah.
But do they think Korean office culture is becoming more liberal?
Do you think it's becoming more liberal?
Popularity of these comics, one of the signals of the culture of a Korean office become more liberal. Because before that, we don't even talk about this stuff.
Despite the rigors of office life here, cartoonist Yang Kyung-soo says most Koreans are still drawn to these types of jobs because they provide financial stability. And not having a steady and financially stable job can cause rifts within families, like it did in Yang's. His parents are also artists and work on commission, yet they still disapproved of the path he chose.
They couldn't understand why I wanted to study fine art. They knew it would be hard for me to make money. It created a big conflict with them. We haven't spoken for the past 10 years. I doubt they even know about how my career has gone.
Yang says he can now make a living as an artist. His Yakjigi drawings were just published in book form, and he plans to expand the series to depict other occupations too. But the artist says he's not giving up his first artistic passion, Buddhist-inspired paintings. Perhaps it's Buddhism in the first place, he says, that led him to ask whether he's living to work or working to live. For Asia Calling, this is Jason Strother in Seoul.
That's all for this edition of Asia Calling. Our program today was produced in the studios of Radio KBR in Jakarta, Indonesia. To find out more about our show, send us a message on our Asia Calling Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Asia Calling. You can now also podcast the show, go to the iTunes store and search for Asia Calling, and subscribe for free to our weekly episodes. I'm Kate Lamb, back next week with more stories from Asia.
Sau tất cả, mình lại trở về với nhau. Tựa như chưa bắt đầu, tựa như ta vừa mới quen. Sau tất cả, lòng chẳng hề đổi thay. Từng ngày xa lìa khiến con tim bồi hồi, và ta lại gần nhau hơn nữa. Có những lúc đôi ta dần thầm trách nhau không một ai nói điều gì. Thời gian cứ chậm lại, từng giây phút sao quá dài để
khiến anh nhận ra mình cần em hơn. Tình yêu cứ thế đong đầy trong anh từng ngày. Vì quá yêu em nên không thể làm gì khác. Chỉ cần ta mãi luôn dành cho nhau những chân thành. Mọi khó khăn cũng chỉ là thử thách. Vì trái tim ta luôn luôn thuộc về nhau. Sau tất cả mình lại chung lối đi, đoạn đường ta có nhau, bàn tay nắm chặt bấy lâu. Sau tất cả mình cùng nhau sẽ chia, buồn phiền không thể khiến đôi tim nhạt nhòa và ta lại gần nhau.
Thuộc về nhau.